I'm a hobo CEO, a hobo CEO. My company is wherever I go. I'm a hobo CEO. I'm a hobo CEO.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers. Or no trousers at all.
Welcome.
Hello.
Ladies, gentlemen.
Welcome.
This is Chris Kirtland.
And Nico Apple.
Coming to you from our kitchen in Berlin.
And it looks like this is going to be the last or maybe second to last show we're going to do whilst being in Berlin, because it's like another week and then...
Then we won't be able to touch each other.
Yeah. Okay. Chris is going to leave to Tokyo. So we're already a little bit sad about that. Yes.
Cues and
but we're hobos. Sadnesses. Yeah, we're hobos, so we're gonna stay in contact. We're gonna manage, aren't we?
Yes, so we will be covering a question about getting clients.
We're gonna introduce our newborn concept that we're gonna elaborate and work out.
Which is, drum roll, the power of nonsense.
Amazing.
And let's start with the past. So last week we had the first hobo hangout. We thought we should make an effort to be available and reach out to you guys out there listening. So we invited a bunch of people and we had a nice hangout, Google Hangout.
Yeah.
With like six,
six of
us in total. And here's the thing, we want to make this a regular. It was like half meetup, half mass business mastermind, half fun social gathering thing.
Exchanging war stories.
Yeah, war stories and all that, showing wounds and stuff.
Because you got video.
Yeah, sure. So we're going to make this regular. Probably if it works out, like once a week.
Yeah, so check out our website, hoboceo.com/hobo-hangout, where we will detail the next up and coming hobo hangout and how to join it.
Yeah, grab a seat, come say hello and ask us all kinds of questions. Show us your scars and wounds.
Splendid. So I was contacted recently by Mark and Philip from the bakery, software developers. And they are also hobos. And they wanted to interview me about Berlin, and I wanted to interview them about their suitcase. So let's hear what they had to say.
Let's see what they got cooking.
Baking.
Baking.
Splendid. Joining us for today's hobo suitcase interview is Mark and Philip from the bakery.
Hello. Hello, hello.
Thanks for joining us. So, Mark or Philip or both of you, what in a sentence is funding your hobo existence?
So at the moment, I would say it's mostly our savings and the Italian government. We're currently participating in this startup accelerator program, which finances an apartment in Italy, at least, and in lieu of pocket money every month.
Marvelous. Yeah. So you're government endorsed hobos.
Absolutely.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. And you've mentioned, obviously, the apartment in Italy, but we're not in Italy right now. Where are you located at the moment?
So we're currently in Berlin. We're on a little road trip. Mm-hmm. We tend to do these pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. So we love to travel. Our home base is in Trento, Italy, so northern Italy in the Alps. And we wanted to visit Berlin and run a few experiments around here. Discovered a local startup scene, so we jumped in the car and just drove around Germany. We stopped by in Prague for 3 or 4 days, mm-hmm. and we're currently in Berlin for a couple weeks, basically.
Nice.
Yeah.
And do you have a destination in line after Berlin?
I will have to make our way back to Trento somehow, so we might stop on the way. We haven't really figured it out yet. We need to look at a map and figure out what's interesting. Maybe stop in Munich and head back to Trento for a couple months and then we'll see. We'll take it from there.
Not quite skiing season yet, is it?
Not yet, unfortunately. Yeah, we wish.
Some promising snow on the top of the mountains, yeah. But not enough yet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you guys are located fairly close to the Alps, where you're.
Yeah, we're right there, right in the middle. I mean, we can look at the mountains from our window.
So a couple of snowboarding hobos.
Yeah, hopefully.
Marvelous. Let's move on to your luggage. So, what is the average weight of your luggage?
Pretty heavy for myself. As I said, we have a car right now. Yeah. So, I mean, we were roommates in San Francisco a few months ago, and we moved out of like pretty fast. I mean, I think in a few days I had to sell my stuff and give, probably throw away even more. Mm-hmm. So pack everything in an airplane. So that was a challenge. So I was probably at 23 kilos, mm-hmm. right at the limit. Mm-hmm. But I grabbed my car back in Paris and drove to Italy. And so now I'm pretty much unlimited. So right. We're probably around there, 20 kilos, I'd say.
So you're special hobos in as much as you actually have a vehicle.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
Cool.
Vehicle powered.
Life-saving. It helped us this summer. We had to sleep in the car a couple of times.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, proper hobo. So I guess that answers the next question. Cabin luggage only or not?
Unfortunately not.
You're above, way above that. Yeah.
You're the whole
cabin. All our winter stuff with us.
You have your own cabin.
Exactly.
Yeah. Pretty much.
What is most likely to get you questioned by airport security?
I carry my flask. In my backpack often. I think that might be pretty questionable. Uh-huh. My mother's gift, by the way. Thanks, Mom. Uh-huh. Very helpful in...
like a flask.
Yeah. Like we usually put alcohol.
Right.
So I guess that could be problematic. Uh-huh. It's the only thing I can think about. I mean, you get kind of disciplined over years, right? Traveling. Yeah. So you kind of know what not to put in in your baggage. But, you know, I've definitely smuggled bottles of stuff in my luggage. We all have, right?
For me, it's probably this electric toothbrush I have. Uh-huh. You know, it sometimes it goes on by itself and starts vibrating in the luggage.
Like Fight Club.
Like Fight Club.
Fight Club.
Yeah, after, yeah.
Every now and then, it's a dildo.
We don't explicitly call it your dildo.
Splendid.
Yeah.
So interesting, a flask and an electric toothbrush. Moving on, what is the most expensive and the least expensive thing that's worth carrying?
Most expensive, I think, are computers.
Computers,
yeah.
That's pretty much our office.
That's the pretty standard hobo answer.
Yeah.
It's the MacBook Pro.
Less expensive than I need that.
I'd say these like ear cleaning.
Cotton buds.
Cotton buds. Yeah. Because when you come somewhere and they don't have them, like I really like start panicking.
Yeah.
Because it's like you want your ears clean, right? And they're not very expensive. So to me, that would be like the least expensive thing I would carry.
Yeah. I was gonna go for my socks. I mean, socks are important too.
Yeah. I'm totally with you there. Like. More, you know, if you don't have underwear, you can just go commando.
Yeah.
But you need fresh socks.
Yeah.
So, final question. Anything else we might like to know about your luggage?
Always the man.
What about your beds?
Our beds, yeah, we can tell you about our beds. So yeah, we carry our beds with us. It's part of our luggage, actually. So this summer we were doing a little road trip around Italy and stopping at a few different places where we knew people, actually. And this first place we stopped at in northern Italy, this guy had a swimming pool. It has these nice swimming pool mats that you could you know sit on and mm-hmm. lay down on. He offered us to take two of them with us. So we considered it. It took a lot of space in the car, but we thought about it. We're like, okay, we might need these later on. And as it happened, we did need them later on.
Yeah.
We ended up spending probably about 10 days during the vacation sleeping on these things. So they're like, yeah, very standard, like swimming pool mats that we now carry all around the place. So we have them in the car. We've used them a couple of days ago, actually. So that's probably the
international hobos.
The weirdest thing.
Swimming pool mats.
Yeah.
Their millionaire friend with the swimming pool took pity on them.
Exactly. Yeah. He still wants them back, I think, so eventually we'll have to drive by his house again.
If we can thank him on this podcast. Alessandro Marchesini, thank you very much, man. Hope you're listening to this.
Yeah. Most appreciated.
Most appreciated, yeah.
Splendid, chaps. Well, thanks for joining us, Mark and Philip from the bakery.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
So, big thanks to Mark and Philip from the bakery. Look forward to hanging out with them again in some other city around the world. So, from baking to making.
Nice.
We've had a question from Yohai Rosen, a web developer.
Yeah, and he used the nice voice message thing that we got on the site. So if you want to ask, give us a question, there's a nice voice message plugin that Chris installed.
So just fire up hoboceo.com
yeah.
and click on the record a message button on the right hand side. Let's hear Yohai's question.
Hello, Chris and Nico. My name is Yohai. I'm a web developer. And first of all, really like what you're doing. Great stuff. My question is, I'm really interested in hearing your view on how to find clients. Maybe you can talk a little bit about your methods. Maybe you've got some tips, especially for people who are just starting their business and struggling to get their first client. I think it's a really important aspect of becoming a Hobo CEO to establish a good amount of clients before you actually set out the road. Really interested in hearing your take on that. Thanks.
Okay, so the question is how to find clients. That might not be the most useful question you could ask. Actually, as one of my trainers said during my during the coaching education I got, he halfway through the training, he told everybody, he said, now let me tell you something very important. You don't want to get clients. Everybody was like, what? And he's like, he's repeating, you don't want to get clients. What you want is you want clients that you can help. So you got to look for people that fit what you can offer, that have the right resources. And these are the people you want to work with. Everything else is going to be frustrating for both sides.
Mm.
You're not going to make them happy. Going to have a lot more work than you want to do. So that's not what you want to do. Second point might be, Chris.
So, really coming off the back of what you just said, you don't want to start with your skills and look to sort of offer them. What you want to do is you want to find people who have problems which your skills solve. So you're able to go to someone saying, okay, here's your business, here's something I'm going to do, and your business is going to make more money. Or here's something your business is doing wrong, which is losing you money, I'm going to fix it and stop you losing that money. So you want to kind of change the way of thinking rather than like, I'm a web developer. It's like, I'm a web developer who fixes page speed, or I'm a web developer who, makes the compliance with the W3C HTML standard or something. It's like you start looking at the problems you're solving rather than just looking at the skills you have.
And once you start to your target audience, clients, prospects, you will also realize, I can almost certainly predict, they know really little about what you know. So gotta translate whatever it is that you're doing into words that they can understand. As Chris said, like, go into, see the world from their kind of perspective, from their kind of knowledge, like how important is what you're doing or what you can do to them and to their value creation process.
We haven't used the word niche yet, have we?
Yeah. So I think it's like this, at least the third kind of major thing is to niche down. There's a discussion about how good it is to niche down. But here's let's see, the pro argument for niching down is that you're going to appear in your prospect's experience. You're going to appear way more competent if you narrow down what you're doing to something specific.
And you'll be able to speak much more directly to their needs.
Exactly.
Like, I think case in point is ArtWeb. You know, it's a service specifically for the niche of artists. So we know how to communicate with our potential clients. We know what their problems are and we know how we're solving them. Anyway, that's a little bit about rephrasing the question. let's get back to the original question. How can you find clients once you've gone through those steps? Where are you going to reach out to people and get them sending you truckloads of cash? So let's start with the bad places first. One of the worst places would be somewhere generic like Elance or Odesk, where there's a lot of competition from other people. Not to say it's not completely wrong. I know some people who do quite well out of Elance, with places like Elance, there's very low barrier to entry. So you've got everybody on there and it's going to be harder to stick out. It's not to say that you can't. I know some people who dominate specific niches on Elance and they do get clients through it. But I just wanted to start by saying that's probably one of the sort of poorest options. So let's skip on to some other options.
I'd say, to generalize a little more, I'd say like the one of the main challenges as a freelancer or consultant or whatever, you have to get out of a passive customer or client acquisition role. Try to be active about it rather than passive. Instead of getting people referred, reach out to them actively. And the way you do this is you have to know who you want to work with and create solutions for them that they are basically, in best case scenario, irresistible, and you make them more money than they spend on you, and then it's going to be an easy sale.
Back to the original point about knowing what your niche is, knowing what problems you're solving for your clients.
Obviously, if you understand a little bit about business, you can roughly understand how much value you are going to provide to the client with your service. And that's also really important because that's going to help you a lot with pricing, good pricing.
So let's say if Jorge wants to do something right now to actually go out and meet people, let's say he's already figured that stuff out. What are the things he can do? So I think, as Jorge said, meeting people before you go away is really valuable.
If you're good at meeting people face to face, yes, definitely.
And I think if you're not already on the road, that's probably the most important part of preparation, is to leverage the environment you have around you. If you're living in somewhere like New York or London or Paris, where there's going to be plenty of people who can afford to hire you, and there's plenty of opportunities to turn up at an event and mix with these people, then definitely worth doing. Make sure 2 nights a week you're going to some sort of networking event. Plus, make sure it's you're reaching out to people who are not in your normal circles.
Yeah.
Like if you're a web developer, maybe you're already going to web developer meetups, but you're just meeting other web developers.
Yes.
You want to be going to the internet marketing meetups or the small business meetups or the, you know, the enterprise business meetups, where you're likely to mix with people who aren't just in your usual circles.
Mm-hmm.
And more, you know, it's like the diversity of genes, more diverse the people, the more kind of possibility there is.
And there's never a harm in talking and listening, especially to people who are your potential prospects, because you're going to understand the language they're using, the way they think about their problems, what kind of problems they have, obviously, how important these problems are to them, what their pain points are. And the more of this information you gather, better equipped you are for the next negotiation, for the next kind of like sale that you want to make, because that's all going to really be powerful.
So we've got going out, meeting people at events and whatnot.
If you are able to do a little talk, inform people about a specific thing, cycling back to your question, not to the question, but to what Chris said, if you are, let's say, for example, if you are good at WordPress, you could kind of help them compare other kind of website tools, web builders, other CMS systems, and then maybe you could tell them why WordPress is used so often, what the upside and the downsides are, and maybe then offer something like convert their website to WordPress at a fixed rate, something like that.
So what you just said about maybe speaking
is a good,
if you turn up an event and you can do a presentation, that's awesome, because straight away everybody in the room knows who you are. Going a step beyond that is the next point I wanted to mention, is actually organizing some sort of meetup or event. And that can be really easy. You don't necessarily have to put on some big special event. All you need to do is establish that there's a sort of common interest, and there's a need for people to meet up that's not already being met, or there's enough people who want to do this thing.
So you'd be a connector. A
meetup. Yeah, so you'd be a connector. You don't have to speak or anything. It's just, if you're the connector, if you're organizing a meetup, you automatically kind of earn all the points from anybody that turns up. So if you get a meetup and some real high flyers turn up, immediately everybody that's gone to the meetup associates you with those high flying people because you managed to get them to your meetup. Whether, you know, it could be as simple as just posting something on meetup.com and they turn up.
Yeah.
So I'd say that's a real real easy way of meeting people, is actually organizing your own event or meetup. All right, skipping on to the third point, which we've got on our little bullet point list, is doing some sort of project to get exposure. I'd say that... Did you validate.com is a great example of that. Can you explain didyouvalidate.com?
Christian, Max, and me, we always tackle the question of validating business ideas, our own business ideas, other people's business ideas. And if you hang out with a lot of entrepreneurs, you realize that some of them actually do validate their business ideas and others just do some stuff and they hope something sticks. So we created this little website that's hosted on, or you can find it at didyouvalidate.com.
Did you validate the business model for Did You Validate?
Yeah. Did you look at the numbers? Did you do some rough calculations? Did you think this through? Is there some kind of repeatable process in your business idea?
So what's the website? What happens when you visit the website?
Well, people are going to find out.
Okay, well, let me give another example of doing projects to get exposure. The idea is basically you release something that's fun or interesting or useful that you want to do and you're interested in doing. Maybe it's something that takes you an afternoon. Maybe it's a side project that takes you 6 months. But doing these kind of things might not necessarily bring you any money. They might do a little bit if you figure out some way of monetizing it. But it can often bring you a lot of exposure, and especially if it's related to the niche or the area that you're working in, it can be really useful for getting clients.
I have two examples. One of them I recently came across is, there's a guy, he made a YouTube video that's called "What if iOS 7 was created in Microsoft Word?" I think that's the name of the video. And he rebuilds the whole iOS 7, like all the logos, all the app icons and everything, just using Microsoft Word. Like you gotta watch this. It's amazing. And as Max said, like if you watch this and you're still arguing about whether something is the right tool, it just doesn't matter. Like the way you use the tools is way more important than the choice of tools. This is great. I mean, this guy is gonna get famous just for doing that. And another thing, I'm probably not going to be really accurate about that story because I only just heard it secondhand. But there's this guy, designer Dustin Curtis. I follow him on Twitter, for example. And as far as I understand, Dustin Curtis basically, quote unquote, got famous. Maybe I get this totally wrong, but let's just throw it out there. It's just anecdotal evidence, as Chris would say. Yeah. This guy got famous because he redesigned the American Airlines website.
Mm.
So I think he was so pissed off with how bad the design and of the website was, that he did a redesign and he published that and it went totally viral. And I think maybe they bought the design off of him or whatever. But I mean,
just the fact that it goes viral and people sharing it, and he's a designer, that's instantly getting him recognition for his skills, which will, it will just bring people in. It will bring clients in. If you get enough exposure, it's just going to happen. It's inevitable. So that was our fourth bullet point. So a couple of final ideas and then we'll close. Obviously, as we mentioned about kind of figuring out what your niche is, who your target customers would be, that allows you to just narrow down who you might work for, and then you can go after them directly.
Mm-hmm.
You can think about a certain area of industry then you can kind of start gathering contacts in that industry and reach out to them. That's a bit of a no-brainer, that one.
You got to qualify your clients, basically.
Indeed.
Filter, qualify.
Filter, qualify. And then finally, I think don't underestimate just putting the word out there to everybody you know. You have these particular skills and you're available for hire. Back in my freelance days, something like 80% of the work I did came via people that I knew.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe a little bonus idea is you can piggyback. If you know other people who do some kind of work that's related to what you're able, maybe you can kind of complement their skill set, or maybe there are certain areas of a project that they are working on that they are not so comfortable with, and they can kind of subcontract, something like this. So maybe you can help them basically in a specific area of a larger project.
Or to make that a more general point, it's like the kind of idea of an affiliate relationship,
mm-hmm.
where somebody's got leads and they're passing them on to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe in the specific example you're talking about, somebody's doing a project and they need to hire you to do part of the project. Or maybe it's somebody who just deals with a lot of certain type of client which have a similar type of need which you can solve. Then you can have some sort of affiliate relationship where maybe you're paying somebody a commission for referring you the work.
The big picture is, whether you do it now or it happens over time, be active about this and be in charge of this client acquisition process. And I don't think there's necessarily the right or the wrong way, or some kind of these are the only steps that you could take. We also asked ourselves what kind of a market. I mean, this is all basically marketing related, right?
Yeah.
We should mention this. This is not about your skills. This is just marketing, and we're gonna get back into marketing in our Power of Nonsense section later, I think. But we thought like would be some source of good advice on sincere advice on marketing. The only person we could come up with is Seth Godin. I read some of his books. I love his blog posts.
He's the man. Everyone will recommend Seth Godin.
Seth Godin is talking about the marketing. Godfather of marketing.
Yeah.
Check out his podcast. I think 17 episode podcast. I think the Startup School.
Mm. Yeah.
Something like that. Seth Godin Startup School. You're gonna find it on iTunes. It's great.
Yeah. So I hope our ideas are useful. Yeah. Marketing in general, and follow up with Seth Godin. That's.
And hop on the Hobo Hangout sometime and let us know how you're doing. If you have any more specific questions, let us know.
Splendid. So on to the Power of Nonsense.
So the Power of Nonsense. A couple of days ago, Chris kind of had this great idea that we could create some kind of movement.
Movement, yes.
Sounds grandiose. But
we're going to change the world, Nico.
Absolutely.
We're going to change the world with the power of nonsense.
And we're gonna start our movement at drop by drop. Like, we're going to drip in little seeds.
We're going to slowly hypnotize you.
Slowly.
Week by week.
Week by week.
Until you become our disciples.
And for now, the working title of this project is The Power of Nonsense.
Amazing. So, what is the power of nonsense, I hear you ask? I hear you demand an explanation.
Define it.
What is this nonsense? So, following on from last week's Hobo CEO recording, where we introduced the idea of understanding how not to understand.
Exactly.
We realized that rationally, we can't understand everything. There's just too much to fit into our puny little minds. I posit there's even too much to fit into logic and reason and science and technology.
So let's start with to try to explain what we're pointing to with as little words as we can. What we are so far sure of is there's two parts to the power of nonsense. And then let's also caution everybody that we're evolving this, we're exploring this, and we hope we can get more precise, more concise with this
and
over
give you
time.
Actionable steps.
Sure. And all that, and some other concepts that relate to that. So the power of nonsense, Chris, as you explained it to me, and as we discussed yesterday over dinner, has a really good dinner, by the way, has two parts. So the first part is
the paradox that rationally you can't understand everything.
There's a limit to what the mind can grasp.
Mm.
And the second part is
your mind wants to grasp something. Your mind needs to grasp something. It mm-hmm. does still demand an explanation. It mm-hmm. does demand a model as to how things work.
And what we're going to try to do is to provide a model with which you can use the mind to kind of like compensate for what the mind can do. That, like, we have to use the mind, be rational about the fact that there's stuff that's non-rational, nonsensical, that what we call nonsense, that's still really, really powerful. And we have to balance or reconcile this paradox that you mentioned. And we have to use a tool, but use it in a way where it, like the mind, becomes aware of its limitations.
Mm. So that's a little 2-minute intro into the idea. Let's kind of look at some more specific examples and inspiration behind this thinking.
What would be a good example for something non-rational that still is valid? Because there's a lot of things out there in the world. Like, rationally, if you look at them, they don't make sense. That's the important part. Mm. They don't make sense. They are not rational. They might not even be logic.
Mm.
They follow the rules of what's logic. Do you have a good example? What's something that's outside of the realm of the rational, but still something that's powerful and important?
So I think stuff like religious beliefs or believing in fate, believing in something intangible, that can often be extremely useful because, say you're starting a business or something
mm-hmm.
and you have this conviction that you're doing the right thing.
Yes.
You had, I don't know, in the morning you looked in your cereal and there was a picture of a bishop. Yeah. And that meant something to you. That kind of validated in your mind that you're doing the right thing. That kind of conviction, you just can't kind of grow that out of rationality. But that conviction is really powerful. And I'm sure everybody's met somebody who has that kind of conviction. And it really fuels and really powers you. So I'd say often you kind of weird, quacky religious beliefs or whatever. Any rational logician, anybody who's kind of into logic and rationality, generally errs on the side of religion being absolute nonsense. Philosophically, it might not be provable that there's no kind of space for some sort of, deity in the grand scheme of things. But even whatever you kind of believe, like rationally, it generally doesn't make sense. But the conviction you come out from having these kind of non-rational beliefs is very useful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jealous of people that have this.
Yes. It can be really, really cool to have an enabling belief, even though it's wrong. And here's a great example. One of my teachers, Richard Bandler, is known to be a great hypnotist. So he got approached by a friend of his who's also into NLP and hypnosis and so on. And this guy comes to Richard and tells him that he really has trouble to do a trans phenomenon called positive hallucination, where you see, hear, or feel something that isn't there. So he approaches Richard because he thought, like, if there's a person in the universe who could help him, it might be Richard. So Richard tells the guy to close his eyes, puts him in a trance. As far as I remember the story, this is over lunch or whatever. And he asked the person to hallucinate a book in front of him on the table, one of Richard's books. It's called The Structure of Magic. It has a really colorful kind of cover. Now, Richard happens to have that book with him. And while the guy has his eyes closed, Richard just places quietly the book on the table in front of the guy and then asks him to open his eyes and see if he can positively hallucinate the book. And the guy opens his eyes, looks at the book, and Richard says to him, as soon as he has, seen the book, he can close his eyes again and, brings him back out of the trance. takes the book away, asks the guy says, yeah, it was amazing, I totally could see the book, and it felt so real, and so on and so forth. And like weeks after, the guy was so convinced he could do all kinds of positive hallucinations. It was really helpful to them, and to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great example. Yeah. I like that.
What we want to talk about is the power of nonsense will be about how you can be yourself and the other guy in the example I just gave. How you can be the guy asking the question and how you can trick yourself. You know, like sometimes it's really cool because like Richard helped the guy. He tricked him, but he basically like usefully, helpfully tricked him into something that, into, let's call it an enabling belief. And we want to explore the idea how you could do this consciously, like how you could use your mind, your conscious rationale to help you, trick you into...
to harness the power of nonsense.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think this is an important thing, is because one of the motivations behind this is looking out there and realizing there's so many people who are just speaking bullshit and tricking people and using kind of crappy hypnosis, NLP marketing stuff to get people to buy their product, to sign up, to believe them, to follow the, this guru, to set themselves on fire or whatever it is. And, you know, we're trying to find this happy medium between harnessing this power, but also giving you the tool to understand what's really going on rather than just being blindly tricked like Richard Bandler's student.
Okay, can I surprise you with something totally unprepared? What about firewalks?
Firewalks.
Are you, I mean, is everybody familiar with the concept of fire? Okay, I don't think we have to explain it. I mean, you can Google it. So people walk over hot coals and they don't burn their feet. It's kind of a problem. Like there's some like semi-scientific explanations for this. Like, you know, like your feet sweat and blah, 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 blah. But like, from a rational kind of standpoint, you should fucking burn your feet.
Yeah.
You can't just walk across, I don't know, like 10 meters of hot coals without burning your feet. So that's one of these things that might be, you know, outside of... And then people do this.
Well, this is a good example, actually. Yeah, because I used to work in a Chinese takeaway and I used to get burnt all the time. But I kind of stopped getting burnt because I learned... If I responded a certain way to being splashed with hot oil, I wouldn't get burnt. If I like sort of panicked, then I would get burnt. If I kind of relaxed and like just was calm and, you know, didn't worry about it so much, I generally wouldn't get burnt. And I kind of practiced this again and again over time. And okay, I've never tried the hot coal walking, but in my mind, in my experience of burns, I think the way I respond, what I do with my mind affects how my body responds to the tissue, how the tissue responds to that heat. And I don't know, I'm not a scientist and I don't know how tissues are affected by heat, but I would hazard a guess there's something that's perhaps beyond the current scientific understanding which your body is capable of doing, of dissipating heat. So yeah, I think...
So the hot coal example is really interesting because what it's usually used for, except that it's a kind of like a... nice experience or whatever, it to use some NLP lingo, it installs a new belief. It installs the belief, it loosens a lot of other beliefs because it shows people that they can do something which they thought would be impossible. The reasoning behind it is that if you wouldn't believe these coals are not gonna harm you, or let me phrase that positively, if you'd be convinced that you get burned, you would get burned. That's what you basically just confirmed with the example.
Yeah.
Now, here's something really irrational about the whole thing. A lot of people, they do these firewalks time after time and time and time again. So some people have like, have done like 15 firewalks, which is not the point. It's I think it's quite funny because, you know, it should be a one-time thing. You should be convinced, like, you can do it. But okay.
Yeah.
I also just talked to a friend of mine who attended a workshop and they did the thing that you may have seen people do on TV, like the Shaolin monks, where they put some kind of metal spear on the, what's the, can you explain?
I don't know what that is, in your neck.
Yeah, on the, you know, on the bottom side of on, of your neck. Actually, at the like the most like the softest place, the softest spot. And then you do this with a partner, and you put the spear like between you, and then you walk towards each other, and the spear should you know, break or whatever. He said he was one of the last people in the workshop to try it, while everybody else was already doing it. And then he somehow got convinced he could do it. He did it. He broke the, they, I mean, they didn't use spears. They used some kind of metal, but he said it was actually pretty strong. He said like trying to bend it with his, and he's a strong guy, with his arms was really, really hard. But then he did it with a partner. The guy was like, the guy was already convinced that he could do it. And after they did it one time, he said like they went through 5-6 of those things, and it wasn't a problem at all.
This comes up with martial arts a lot, you know, breaking boards.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. You've really got to be convinced. You've really got to focus. And yeah, this is a really good example. This is where it kind of makes some sense, because you can see that having kind of reservations, I think we've all experientially noticed that if you have caution and reservations, it does tend to impede your ability to do things.
Mm-hmm.
So being having this kind of, you know, being convinced, it tends to focus you. And it's this is a sort of much more subconscious process. But obviously, there's actual real physical manifestations of what's going on.
Now, breaking a spear or not getting burned by coals might not even be the most nonsense that you can think of. There are some way more non-rational, nonsensical things that actually do work out for those people who, for lack of a better term, let's for now call it, believe in them. Mm.
And what am I holding in my hand, Nico?
It looks like a fancy, kind of big-ass crystal.
It's our lucky quartz crystal. And I'm using this right now to communicate to our listeners their homework. So this is an important exercise demonstrating the power of nonsense. What we would like you guys to do, or what we would offer you to as an exercise, is to find yourself a lucky charm and to believe it, to convince yourself that it works. So, Nico, you were just saying, you know, maybe some people have their best T-shirt, which always gets them the girl in the bar whenever they're wearing this T-shirt. Or they have a ring, which means that they always get the client and they close the deal. You know, the idea of a lucky charm, I'm sure you're familiar with. What we'd like you to do is to find a lucky charm and use it. Because this is a really good, tangible example of what we're talking about.
Become consciously superstitious?
Yes.
So make conscious effort to become superstitious and see how well this works for you.
You've really got to convince yourself. You've really got to believe it. You've really got to, you know, hold this charm in your hand and use its power. And, you know, this charm that I'm holding in my hand is convincing you now to go out there and convince yourself. Use the power of your charm. For those of you who need a rational premise, I'll leave you with this. There's no way that you can categorically say that something like a lucky charm isn't going to have an influence. The nature of matter is not fully understood, and there's so many possibilities that remain unknown to our rational understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't categorically say that there's not some possibility of an effect. So just use that suspension, have that suspension of doubt as your rational escape route for allowing you to do this irrational thing of convincing yourself that the lucky charm works.
If that doesn't work for you, I think we have at least two more really interesting things coming up in the next episode that are going to shake your firm and rational beliefs if you do the experiments.
Indeed.
To be continued.
To be continued.
Oh, this is getting super mysterious.
Well, it's just been Halloween.
Yeah.
I think it's good timing.
And it's a podcast magic production.
Cool. Marvelous. Well, I think that's a wrap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice one, guys. We'll look out for you on the normal social media channels and maybe hang out with some of you on our next hobo hangout. Catch you later.
attention, morality, neurons, pipe dreams, protons, hunting, leaping, jumping, kite surfing, landing pages, optimization, and superpowers.
Another amazing podcast magic production.